Hi, I'm Jason Wacob, founder and co-CEO of MindBodyGreen, and your host for the MindBodyGreen podcast, where I'll be bringing you deep and insightful dialogues with some of the greatest minds in wellness. If you like what you hear, please consider giving us a 5-star review and comment. And don't forget to visit us at MindBodyGreen.com for your daily dose of wellness, and make sure to check out all of our great offerings, including our online classes and trainings. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Hi, I'm Jason Wacob, founder and CEO of MindBodyGreen, the best-selling author of Wealth, and your host for the MindBodyGreen podcast, where I'll be bringing you deep and insightful dialogues with some of the greatest minds in wellness. If you like what you hear, please give us a 5-star review, comment, and share with your friends and family. And don't forget to visit us at MindBodyGreen.com for your daily dose of wellness. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. This week, I'm honored to have two incredible mission-driven entrepreneurs on the podcast, the husband and wife co-founders behind the pioneering brand Epic Provisions, Katie Forrest and Taylor Collins. You probably are all aware of the brand Epic Provisions as it's found in retailers across the country, but you might not know about the why behind the brand. How Katie suffered from a number of unidentifiable health issues and went from a vegan Ironman triathlete to a paleo entrepreneur. Katie and Taylor are also extraordinarily passionate about regenerative agriculture, which makes for healthy soil, more nutritious food, and can literally help save our planet. It's an honor to have them here today. Katie, Taylor, welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
So great to have you guys here, all the way from one of my favorite cities, Austin, Texas.
Yeah, we're excited to be here. We've never actually been to Brooklyn.
Oh, wow. This is where weird. It's at.
I know.
Austin's like the Brooklyn of Texas.
Exactly. I think about it the other way, like Brooklyn might be.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
So
it's a cool place.
You guys are husband and wife, co-founders, and have an interesting story. And let's dial it back to what I've heard, what I've read is this serendipitous like meeting of the eyes back in high school that led to the empire of Epic.
Yes.
And your relationship and family and all that good stuff.
That sounds like I might have told that story because I've been known to exaggerate at times, but I think it's just completely accurate.
He's a good storyteller.
Katie's memory has faded since then. But when we first saw each other, I was a senior in high school. Katie was a young freshman, off limits, but I could at least remember one day specifically. Taking a bathroom pass from class, walking down the hallway, seeing Katie on the other end of a long hallway, locking eyes, and just feeling something so powerful, both internally and externally. It was the first time I had felt anything like that. It was a force of nature that just shook me, and I was panicking. No way was I about to talk to her. But we were walking closer and closer and closer, and then when we passed, it was just a sonic boom. And, you know, again, that was weird, but didn't see or really talk to Katie until probably, 5 years after that.
Yeah, we were, we both went to the same college, and we similar.
How did you experience that moment?
Yeah, true or false? Okay.
Do you have the same? What's your take on that moment?
I wouldn't have called it a supersonic boom. Is that what you call it? But I would have said it was definitely like a memory that I hold close to my heart. I definitely recall the moment of walking past this hallway and being like, this is super weird. I have a boyfriend, but I'm like super attracted to this guy. Avert eyes. Sonic boom is
forbidden.
A good
one. Yeah.
It's forbidden love.
I think possibly Katie and I have been together in previous lifetimes, and that's why it was so powerful.
And it was a reconnection in this lifetime.
Yeah, that was the first time we reconnected.
I'll have to bring Shaman Durek on the podcast to confirm that.
Yes.
But it was 5 years. So time passes, and then you find yourselves at college together. The rest is history?
Pretty much. We had another passing, this time in a park, with geese, like mean geese.
Yeah, wild geese in this area called Sewell Park, really beautiful Texas Hill Country, right by the San Marcos River. And Katie and I had to cross paths between classes again, but this time we shared our walkway with a bunch of wild geese. And you know, I think both of us were afraid of the geese, but we thought that was maybe a little bit silly. And so we always just tried to kind of pick up our step as we'd walk towards each other and hope that we didn't get swarmed or flocked or attacked. But no geese ever came after us. But we started seeing each other again. And then Katie just randomly called me one day after my birthday. Or no, it was actually on my birthday. And she said, do you want to carpool together? Do you want to ride to school? Commute from Austin?
Because I knew his brother. I didn't just like look up his phone number in the phone book. And so, yeah, I called him to see if he wanted to commute. And we ended up never commuting. And we went to like a modern dance or something for extra credit for one of my classes. And then we stayed up all night talking and sitting on his front porch and just enjoying each other. And we moved in like 2 months after that. And my mom was like, what are you doing? This is insane. That's a terrible idea. But it was a good idea.
In this relationship, you know, obviously relationships moving forward, you fall in love and talk to us about the point where you say like, let's start a business together.
Yeah. So I think what happened was that Katie and I were just so into spending time together. Like we were just carving out any excuse or opportunity to hang out and, you know, we'd study together. We would go to the gym together. But, you know, we ended up having to always go our separate ways for work. So we're like, hey, I got an idea. What if we work together? Then we could hang out even more. We could talk more and listen to music together and just have fun all the time. And so that was the genesis of pretty much, hey, do you want to be my business partner? Because you're my life partner. And I think this could work. And so we started a commercial recycling business in Austin, which at the time, Austin provided residents with recycling options, but no businesses, condos, or local restaurants had it. So we created that market. And at one point in time, we were servicing probably about 30 different accounts. And it was not romantic at all. We busted our asses. I mean, there was multiple times where either rats would fly out of containers.
Milk jugs exploding in your face, like, yeah. Because of like such high bacteria compression. Sure. It was just like explosion.
Yeah, glass was always getting stuck in our hands.
Yeah.
One time, I mean, there was multiple times that like a barrel, 200 pounds of recycling glass would fall out of the truck on the highway.
Yeah.
And we'd have to like stop there and pick it up. It was
dangerous.
It was tough.
And so from that business, at some point you decide, okay, let's move on. So we're going to potentially a more interesting space and talk about your first venture in a CPG.
Yeah. So we were getting really into endurance sports together. And that started when we just wanted to spend more and more time together outside. So we were going on like 100-mile bike rides. Katie is a natural badass. She won her first Ironman race. We have this history of doing everything to the extreme. So we were like, hey, you want to do a triathlon? Sure. Let's sign up for an Ironman. And so we did it. Katie won. And we were spending more and more time together outside training. Obviously, eating was a really important part of that lifestyle. And so we thought, hey, let's make a energy bar company that fuels our own needs and our own adventures. And so we launched this brand called Thunderbird Energetica, which was a vegan raw food bar at the Kona Ironman World Championship race.
What year was that?
2011?
Yeah, 2011. Wow. We had brought samples, you know, from the mainland to the island, and we were handing them out. We were like, we had chalk, and we were drawing Thunderbird logos on the streets where all the athletes were going to be racing, and we had made jerseys and shirts and hats, and we didn't know what we were doing. Ultimately, I think Thunderbird was our opportunity to learn about consumer packaged goods, and we made so many mistakes, but that was good because we learned from our mistakes, and it was really a creative medium for us to express ourselves, which we hadn't been able to do at that point in time, up until that point in time. Katie was doing art for a really long time. I was always into music, and I was a musician, and we kind of like lost that ability to communicate how we felt, and so we started a consumer packaged good company that was really fun and a reflection of ourselves.
While we were also working like full-time jobs or going to school full-time. So Taylor's actually a physical therapist. while doing this Thunderbird product. And I was in school. I was getting my doctorate in counseling psychology.
Wow.
And so it was when we started actually selling a significant amount of product that we were like, let's quit school. Let's quit our job and like go for it. And that was like obviously a big decision, but those two things were like killing our souls.
Sure.
So,
and at some point, so you're essentially vegan, if I remember correctly. And at some point you start to not feel so hot.
Yeah. Yeah. So training for all these races, you want to optimize your body. And conventional wisdom at the time was telling us like, you need to consume a lot of carbohydrates in order to fuel yourself. And so, you know, like we would do the standard carb loading prior to a big day on the bike. And we just weren't feeling very good. And so we were like, well, maybe we're just not eating clean enough. Like, let's clean up our diet.
Sure.
And cleaning up our diet to the world at that time meant like going vegetarian. And that wasn't making me feel any better. And so it's like, well, maybe we're not going clean enough. Let's go vegan. And so then we went vegan and we still weren't feeling good enough, especially me. And then it was like, well, let's go raw vegan. And that's where the raw vegan energy bar came into play. And then it was like, well, maybe we should be juicing. And so, you know, like we just kept going more and more and more extreme. As Taylor said, we're pretty extreme. Like if we're going to commit to something, like we go to the very edge of all the limits. And so, yeah, I just got to the point with this like raw vegan diet where like my body was breaking down in so many different ways. I was having like stomach issues on a daily basis, literally at like 3 o'clock every afternoon. I could guarantee that I was going to be completely debilitated. Like I couldn't exercise. I couldn't study. Like it was like, okay, it's almost 3 o'clock. I better go home because I need to sit on the couch because it's going to be a wreck for the rest of the day. Like my stomach was just awful. And then I had really bad inflammatory issues too. At one point my knee just out of nowhere like blew up into like this huge elephantitis looking type knee, which was a huge issue if you need to ride a bike because I literally couldn't bend it to a 90 degree angle. It was so inflamed. And I went to like every health practitioner that I could have possibly visited in Austin. And I was put on rheumatoid arthritis medication. I was told I needed a total knee replacement. I was given exploratory knee surgery. Like it was a mystery to everyone. Nobody could figure out what was going on and nothing was fixing it. So it wasn't until I went to a holistic health practitioner who basically said like, well, what are you, the first person to say, what are you eating? And you know, I told him like, well, yeah, I'm so clean. I'm eating a raw vegan diet. And he's like, well, maybe that's where we start. And he basically recommended that I transition my diet to what's now considered paleo. But he's like, you need to cook your vegetables. You need to remove all the grains because I was doing a lot of grains because I was vegan. Sure. You need to remove the soy and the dairy and start incorporating grass-fed animal protein back into your diet. And Taylor and I are super extreme. And so we were like, all right, tomorrow. Tomorrow's the day. We're starting this tomorrow. And we had just finished a half Ironman. And we found out that all this information from this doctor. And we were like, okay. And so like on the way home, we were like researching, like, what are we going to cook? What's it going to be? What's our new lifestyle going to be like? And we went home and we bought a steak. And we boiled it, which is not how you cook meat. We learned a hard lesson there. And it was super gross. Don't do that. But I think maybe it was like the next day or something. We made a hamburger and then bacon. And then we like found all this delicious meat. And it changed our lives.
You started to feel better? Like how soon did you start to like notice a difference and recover fully?
Within 4 days, my stomach issues were completely gone.
Wow.
Like 100% gone. And within 2 weeks, my knee that was... it was huge. Had completely healed within 2 weeks, just food alone. So I wasn't on any medication and the surgery that I did didn't do any. I mean, it was just exploratory. So
sure.
So yeah.
And food. So in this phase, like you've radically changed your diet, you heal. Like food is medicine, unbelievable. Some people, you know, everyone's unique and got to find what works and clear what you were doing wasn't working, and you found what worked, and yeah. That's fantastic. when do you decide, like, okay, there's an opportunity here in terms of a new business?
Yeah. I mean, I think all the businesses that we have ever put together haven't been like, ooh, there's this gap in the market. Sure. Let's go fill it. It's been more like, what do we want and what do we need? And how do we make sure that our needs are met? And so that was how the Thunderbird Bar came about. And then for Epic, it was like, once we transitioned our diet, we were still endurance athletes. And so we would cook up like a pound of bacon and put it in a Ziploc bag and put it in our back pockets. And at like mile 90.
It's a lot of bacon.
It's a lot of bacon. but
it must be very popular with like the dogs, like at Air
like traveling. All the pit bulls are running after us on our bikes. No, I mean, seriously, bacon at like mile 95 of a 100-mile bike ride will bring you back to life. Like, truly, it's like the most amazing thing ever. And so, you know, we didn't have conveniently packaged food for our long bike rides and our long hikes and runs. And so it was like, we didn't have any preconceived notions of what you could or couldn't do with animal protein. And so we had this raw vegan energy bar and we were like, well, can we just make this meat? Like, yeah, let's just put meat.
Why not?
Yeah. Why not? Let's put meat in a bar form and put it in a bag.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. Everyone had like sticks, like there were. Yeah. And like your typical like jerky, but no one did just a different form of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, the sticks or whatever that were out there, we didn't believe in their land management and animal welfare sure. practices. And so we didn't want to support them anyway. And so we're like, we just need to make something that we believe in and that we're comfortable consuming.
So when was like Epic born?
When?
Yeah.
2013?
Yeah, we launched Epic in March of 2013 at Natural Products Expo West.
The Mecca.
Yeah, we showed up to the Super Bowl and we won. It was like a dream come true because we literally had been developing this brand and this idea under the radar and no one knew what we were up to. We just showed up.
Had your little booth.
Yeah, had this
lower level.
Pretty badass little booth in the sweet zone. And it was just like, I mean, within hours of that show starting, we knew that we were onto something huge. And we had, you know, commitments, interest from some of the largest natural grocery retailers in the country. The two biggest distributors in the country had already came by the booth saying, how much of this can we get and how quickly can we get it? And we just said yes to everyone. We're like, oh, yeah, done. Yeah, this is easy.
Yeah, we can do that. Sure.
We'll hook you up. Sure. But the fact was that we rolled up to that show and the product that we were actually sampling, we had put together in our hotel room. I was at Airbnb and the packaging wasn't even functional. So the samples that were on the table, people were taking them off the table. And after the show, we figured out, oh my God, that was faulty packaging. Oxygen is getting in that bag.
All of the bars had like,
yeah. You know what happens when natural meat meets oxygen? Well, it's pretty ugly. And so, you know, it was, fake it till you make it for sure.
And so from there, like, it was a pretty wild, like, I remember when you guys, I don't remember Expo, but I just remember all of a sudden around that time frame, just like seeing your brand like everywhere. I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like, happy, like the package, like the packaging was interesting too. Something you talk about, like you put animals on the product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Any expert in branding or marketing at that point in time would have said, hey, if you put an animal on an animal product, that's the worst thing you could possibly do because consumers, they don't want to see that. They don't want to know what they're eating. And we thought that was the opposite.
So backward.
Exactly.
Like, I'm sorry you don't want to see it, but we are consuming animals. And we are going to make sure that you know that, and we're going to honor those animals by putting them on our package in an anatomically correct format. You know, like, at the time, you would look at any meat packaging or dairy packaging, and they'd be like cartoon animals, and it was disrespectful. And so, the way that we thought about our branding was like, how can we really honor these animals that have sacrificed for our consumption?
I love that. Do you think being vegan like definitely made you think about in a way that be like more conscious around like, okay, like here's a choice, here's I understand what I'm doing, like it is an animal, like I want to be respectful, and just like your philosophy on animal products in general, like just talk about that. It's really unique, and I'll segue to like regenerative ag and what
you're doing there, for sure. I mean, when we were vegan, I mean, part of being vegan was because we thought that it was cleaner, but part of being vegan was that we couldn't afford meat, and especially we couldn't afford high quality meat. And we had seen what CAFO operations look like. If you drive through New Mexico, it's hard to not pass a confined animal feedlot operation. And you can smell it. You can smell it from 20 miles away. It's disgusting and so disrespectful, and just it goes so far against our values and what nature is. And so when we came out with a product that was meat-based, we had to...
Yeah, I mean, we have more in common with vegans than we do carnivores.
For sure.
I mean, we have mutual appreciation of land, respect for animals, concern for human health. And so that was a foundation that I think was a new perspective, a new attitude, and a new view on the whole meat category. Because forever and ever, it had been like preservatives, low-quality feedlot animals. Mm-hmm. And we were saying, hey, we're not going to argue with you if you don't want to eat meat. We chose not to eat meat for a while, but we're going to give people who do want to eat meat a better option. And so we called these people conscious carnivores.
Sure.
Or conscious omnivores. That was kind of a term that we were using early on.
We use that a lot here.
Yeah. It's an awesome term.
So it's like you're consciously making a choice, mm-hmm. and being aware of what you're putting in your body.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And being a carnivore is actually... you know, like as a vegan, you sort of just like eat plants and you eat this and that. And being a carnivore and being really conscious about the animals that we consume, it's really made me more conscious about the vegetables that I consume. Like they too are sentient beings. I mean, it's not really something that I thought about as as a vegan. And so, that's sort of incorporated into my new food philosophy.
Yeah, like as you guys talk about land, you know, where you stand today, you're definitely innovating in terms of regenerative agriculture and just like perspective on buying and cattle, and just talk people about like how that started. And I'll segue to General Mills and what you guys are doing there and how you're pushing them to innovate. But like talk about your philosophy on land and regenerative agriculture and like really looking at food and your product as a way to kind of really help save the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for us, we formed a really early connection that changed our life, which was you can't have nourishing, healthy animals without nourishing, healthy soil. And so everything starts there.
I love that. Can you repeat that? That's a good one.
Yeah, and it even goes a layer, it goes a layer deeper too. So you can't have healthy consumers if you don't have healthy, green growing plants that live and thrive in healthy soil. And so we recognized that. We recognized this piece that was pretty earth-shaking at the time in our segment of the market, but it was like, hey, animal health and wellness is very important, and we think healthy animals create healthy humans, the end consumer. But no one was talking about the soil piece, which was like, duh. So once we realized that, that changed our life. And we came across a TED Talk by a guy named Alan Savory.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan Savory is this brilliant ecologist who he's actually from Zimbabwe, and he was a park ranger, right? He was managing thousands of acres, and he was actually looking at the degradation of land. At the time, he thought it was due to elephants, hundreds of thousands of elephants.
He thought it was due to too many elephants, so like
just blame large the blaming the elephants.
Yeah, kind of like how we blame cows.
Right.
And so the solution, which you know some people say here in the United States, is okay. Well, yeah, if animals are bad for the environment, let's remove them all. If our land's being degraded, let's take the animals off the land so they don't overgraze it. So he culled something
40,000 elephants,
which was hard for him because he loves wildlife. He's big into natural ecosystems, and when he culled those animals, the land actually got worse. And so that was a light bulb for him where, you know, reflecting the greatest, most nutrient-rich soil where we grow our food today in this country, those lands have co-evolved with massive herds of migratory animals. So you look back and, you know, 200, 300 years ago, there was 40 million bison on the Great Plains, 20, 30 million elk with them. And that's pretty incredible. And so we actually have fewer animals grazing on pasture today than we did 200 years ago. But our soil was more nutrient rich even two generations ago, right? Like you can see we have to eat eight oranges to get the same nutritional value that our grandparents' generation would have had to get out of one orange. And so
we have to eat twice the amount of meat to get the same nutritional value as you would have two generations ago.
And that's because these natural ecosystems that are symbiotic, where these big herds of ruminant animals come, they disrupt the soil, they urinate, defecate, which is fertilizing it, their hoofs aerate the soil, their bite and their physical presence on grasslands actually stimulates further root growth, which grass is like the superhighway for sequestering carbon out of the atmosphere, putting it back into the soil where it belongs. So it has huge implications for climate change and some of the other critical threats that are that our civilization faces right now. And so we believe that when you can manage animals in appropriate ways, that you can actually create a net positive return on the environment. And so that's the whole idea of regenerative agriculture. It's using animals as your tools to enrich the environment, heal and restore soil health, build soil carbon, biology, biodiversity, make sure you can have effective use of rainfall. I mean, yeah, right now, it's the first time in history that where we're from, Austin, the city says it's not safe to drink the water that comes out of our faucets.
We're on like a boil notice.
And this is crazy. And it's because there's so much erosion. All of the farmland that surrounds our city has been so degraded that it's incapable of actually capturing water. So what happens when it rains? It all creates flash flooding, which ends up going into our water system and picks up pathogens and human waste. And we can't filter that out fast enough because there's silt and clay in the water. And silt and clay are the
two of the three components of soil.
Right. So it's soil in our water. And it's just crazy because it takes nature 500 years to build 1 inch of topsoil. But in Austin, we lost 1 to 2 inches in certain areas in a week.
Jesus.
And so that's critical. And that's why we think agriculture has the biggest ability, the agricultural sector, using a business like Epic to empower and give producers the opportunity to use regenerative practices. That's how we're going to create large, meaningful impact in the world.
I love it. And you guys are definitely making that impact. You know, this year, mentioning Expo West, previously at Expo West in March in 18, General Mills, you guys are part of the General Mills family, had this huge statement around regenerative ag. It was like very much a statement, like if you guys aren't familiar with Expo West, everyone's got like a booth and they're fancy and they just sample product. Like, no. The booth here was just about, it was like a visual storytelling of regenerative ag and what it meant. And I have a feeling you guys played a large role in that, which is amazing. And I just want to segue to like go back to like business is exploding. General Mills, you know, knocks on your door and just walk us through like the growth and the decision to, sell Mucara, the General Mills family. And there's a great article in Inc. about that and selling and the relationship and where it is now and how you guys are making impact there. It's something that we're always curious about at Mind Money Green and believe like, look, like we're all in this to not just preach the choir, to build a bigger church. And if you can get the right people at the right Fortune 500 companies and involve, like there's some real buying power and opportunity to change the supply chain that could bring products to underserved areas and reverse climate change, all the things. And like, I know you guys share that mindset. So just want to like hear about that process and the decision and where you are today. Walk us through that. The Inc. article was great.
Sure. Golly, General Mills, we're like star-crossed lovers for a long time because at that first Expo West show that we launched at, so many people from Mills kept coming by our booth and taking those samples of the product that we didn't want anyone to eat. It was not food safe. And then after that show, they kept ordering stuff from our online store.
And you stopped shipping.
It's like, book that, cancel that order.
Refund.
I mean, we had to have refunded like thousands of dollars.
You were worried they were copying you.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, we were afraid of big business. We were sure. Like, oh, big businesses have money. They can do anything. They could do it better than us, right? And so we were terrified that they were just going to, like, R&D the shit out of it, and we would be out of business in no time. But it turns out they were interested in what we were doing, and come to find out big businesses aren't necessarily very fast and innovative, and they don't know their consumers as well as small businesses might. And so they're like, we really like what y'all are doing.
Yeah. And before we had some further, so it was about 3 years until we connected with Mills again. And in that 3-year time span, we had like 3 other multinational big corporations try to acquire Epic. One was like maybe 4 months after we had launched.
Wow.
Which was crazy. I mean, we don't ever talk about financials or anything, but I just think it's interesting. We had launched, and like this was maybe 5 months after launching, and they tried to buy Epic for $2 million. And so for us, that was more money than we could have ever imagined in our lifetime, right? And
you made the right decision.
We made the right decision, A, because all these other companies that we talked to sucked, and all they cared about was EBITDA, which I still don't even know what that is. Just ask somebody who knows more about finance. But they were always asking about like margins and returns and exit strategies. And we're like, no, they don't fucking get it. Like, that's not what we're about. We're about driving impact, driving change. And so when Mills invited us out to their headquarters, it was myself, our CFO, COO, Robbie, who's like our right-hand man, ride or die partner, and then Katie. And we literally, like, I had a GoPro the whole time. We were making a mini documentary about it. Like, we thought it was just...
We thought it was going to be hilarious. I just wanted to show the video to, like, my mom.
Yeah, we thought we were going to, like, walk in, and there's going to be all these obese, maybe white guys in suits smoking cigarettes. Just not our people. And we were completely wrong, because we got in there, and, like, people were actually really passionate, very young, a lot of genuine users of our product. So that was something that we didn't expect. And on that same meeting, we got invited to the Oval Office, I guess is what we call it, but it's where the board, you know, like it's an $18 billion company. And these are the people running the company. They wanted to meet us.
And they have really soft carpet up on this Oval Office floor. It's really weird. Like you step out of the elevator and you're like, oh my God, it's so soft and cozy. And
should get this for our booth at Expo.
Yeah. This would be so nice to stand on for 3 days straight.
But it was awkward because we weren't expecting to meet these guys who are just brilliant people, right? And we were like wearing flip-flops and ball caps and just like t-shirts. And we got up there, you know, thinking this was going to be super uncomfortable. And we sat with them, and all we talked about was values, mission, and impact. And someone asked us, what's your legacy going to be when you you guys are off the face of the planet? What is Epic going to have accomplished that made the world better? And it's kind of like right there, like, oh man, I actually like these people.
Yeah. You're getting pissed. Yeah. You're like, so what did you say? What is your answer to that? It's a good question.
Yeah. We have 3 legacy goals at Epic that we start. I mean, we wrote these down probably on the back of a napkin when we started the brand. And one was to support the regeneration of 1 billion hectares of land by the year 2025.
That's a lot of hectares. Explain what a hectare is.
That's what ranchers say. I know. That's like,
I'm like, oh, it's like
a so it's like mile. It's like a well, it's like rancher a, term.
Look, at a hectare is maybe like 10 acres or 100 acres.
Got it.
Or
okay.
It's just massive. It's like bigger than our language
sure.
here.
Got it.
Right? Like,
okay.
We own a ranch that's like 700 acres, and that's like not even close to a hectare. So we wouldn't even say hectare ever.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, I think we're
we'll
getting
come back
caught
to the
up
hectares.
On hectares.
Okay, so that's number one.
Oh yeah, number one. Number two was directly, so that was working with the Savory Institute in that partnership, and that was truly regeneratively managed land. And then another goal of ours was to directly impact and convert suppliers that were farming or ranching conventionally and take 1 million acres of conventional management to grass-fed pasture-raised systems.
So the last one, people will say, like, there's not enough to go around.
Yeah.
What's your answer to that?
That's really interesting because we get that asked that all the time.
I know.
And I love, there's actually a report by the Stone Barns Institute where they looked at existing agricultural land in the United States. And they looked at all beef production done in this country. And they found out that if we could increase the productivity of our existing land today by only 20%, that we could grass finish and grass feed every single beef cow in the United States, which is massive. So,
and when he says productivity, he means the production of grass.
Yes. Yeah, yep. So point in case, it's not do we have enough land, but it's are we managing the land appropriately? And I mean, we have some suppliers that have been managing regeneratively year over year. They're seeing 20% increase in productivity year over year, right? And obviously that gets smaller the longer it's under management, the change is less each year. But it's huge. I mean, if you can have twice the amount of bison or cattle on your land just because you're growing more grass, then you're going to do a lot better economically, and you're going to be doing a lot better ecologically as well.
So what's it like for two clearly mission-driven entrepreneurs to sit inside a conglomerate?
We don't really do that.
Well, I know. Not, you don't sit inside physically, but okay. You're part of a okay. conglomerate.
I thought you meant physically, and I was like, we do not do that.
You guys are in Austin. They're in Minneapolis.
It's interesting. You know, we're trying to make an impact on a larger company. And that was one of the primary reasons why we partnered with Mills was, you know, like as Epic, as a small company, like what can our impact really be? But with a big company, like, if Mills could make one tiny change, they could, that would be like 10,000 times the impact that we would have as Epic. So how can we influence them to make those one tiny change and then that have a ripple effect? And we're starting to see that. I mean, 3 years ago when we were acquired, we sat in their sustainability office, which they might have changed the name of now, because we were like, dude, you guys can't use the word sustainable. Like, sustainable is not good enough.
Yeah, it's lame.
Yeah.
And don't, what's the right word?
Regenerative, restore, right? Because if you think that all of the land in this country has been degraded,
you don't want to sustain that.
You don't want to sustain
that. You want to reverse it.
If we're losing right. the nutrient value of our food and we're losing habitat and biodiversity and water infiltration, why the fuck do we want to sustain that?
Right.
So we have a one of our ranching partners named Will Harris out in southern Georgia. His like famous quote is like, you want to do his accent?
Oh, I don't know what quote you're going with.
He's like Yosemite Sam, or Foghorn Leghorn. And he's like, sustainability was good enough until our ancestors fucked everything up. Yeah. Right? So if it's a functioning ecosystem, yeah, we'll sustain that all day. But romantic. So really like challenging consumers to really think about using that word sustainable, especially if you're using it to market your product or to add positive attributes to your brand, because that's pretty weak. That's like saying 100% natural and like sure. giving yourself a high five.
So now, you know, the brand is significantly larger, obviously, than it was when you launched, and have access that others may not have, being, you know, being part of the General Mills family. Like, where do you see, like, where's Epic going? Like, where do you guys want to be in a year from now, 3 years from now? I never say five because I'm like, I don't know what five, I don't even know where I'm going to be in 5 years. Like, three, I can kind of like, you know, venture a guess. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, yeah. What's the vision?
You sound like Katie. That's what she always says when people ask her that question.
I know. I'm like, you must not be evolving. You think I know where I'm going to be in 5 years.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously there's, you know, we love the brand. It's a reflection of our own values and our own mission. And we started the company and we had a really rough ride for a long time. So right now we're at this critical point where I feel like we've paid our dues and worked our asses off, and we're just starting to do some really amazing things and drive big change. So I hope we're both involved in 3 and 5 years. I would be honored to still be a part of it right now, but that's not only up to us.
But where the brand is going, I would say, is that where you're getting?
Yeah, both.
Yeah, so I would say where the brand is going is towards more regenerative, right? We just launched a product with a brand new verification seal, so a consumer can pick up our package and feel confident that the package that they're holding and the meat that's in that package has made the land better. So it's called Land to Market, and it's an outcomes-based verification seal. And so it's the first of its kind. It's literally the only verification out there that says, like, this product has positive impacts on the soil, on the land. And so we literally just launched that. And so over the next, like, 3-5 years, I mean, Epic, in order to evolve, it has to continue to convert and transform our other product lines with that verification model in mind.
I love that. How do you think about product lines? Are there any, like, interesting new SKUs or products or categories you're thinking about?
Always.
Yeah, always.
Always.
I mean, one...
But I can't tell everybody.
One for me that's just really exciting is it's just like the whole breakfast category and starting your day. And how do you do that in a way that's similar to the convenience that Epic has already always provided, like the convenience and the high quality protein. And so we've really been racking our brains on creating a product that is just so disruptive and innovative for that whole breakfast notion in that category. And we've come up with some cool ideas, and I think we're going to land in a really good spot. And so that's probably what I'm most excited about from an R&D perspective.
When will we see that in market?
I think by the end of next year.
So end of 19.
I mean, if it were old Epic, it would be faster. But it's General Mills Epic, and so it's a little bit slower. There's a little bit more process. But hopefully by the end of next year.
Yeah. General Mills Epic, it's like, it's probably going to taste better and be better right off the bat, but it's also going to take 3 times longer.
So what are other, like, categories? Like, there's so much happening in the natural world and CPG. Like, what's interesting to you? What categories, what products, what brands? Like, what do you say, like, oh, wow, huh? Maybe not for Epic per se, but, like, that's cool. That's interesting. Like, I'd be doing that.
Yeah. I'll say one category that I've started seeing some disruption on that I just think is genius and brilliant. And Katie and I always told Katie, like, if Epic fails, if it just, like, one day goes away and we have to do this over again, what we have to do is we have to start a baby food company. But we have to incorporate healthy fats into the baby food. And that's something that blows my mind. We have a little girl named Scout. And so going through this whole process with her and Katie breastfeeding Scout, like, her diet for the first part of, for the majority of her life, has been high fat, no, like, very low carb, high protein. And then whenever you transition to these baby food packets, like, oh, here's some sugar and here's some carbs and no fat, no protein, which is, like, opposite, inverted of what they would naturally be eating. And so there's a company called Serenity Kids who's doing grass-fed freaking meats in baby food packs for,
that's
like,
cool,
one-year-olds. And so it's high-fat, super clean ingredient labels. They have, like, beef and bison and chicken. I just love it. So for me, yeah, the category would be kind of like the high fat category, low carbohydrate. Really excited.
So high fat everywhere.
Yes. High fat options.
High fat options.
High fat marketed as a positive attribute.
What do you think about keto?
Man, we've done keto.
We did keto before we did Epic because we wanted to know who, what a diabetic consumer would be looking for and, like, what their day would look like in terms of consumption. In an ideal state without medication. And so we did this ketogenic diet, and we were literally, like, pricking our finger, testing our ketones. We were truly on a keto.
Really testing it.
We were on a real ketogenic diet, not like this fake keto thing where people are just, like, eating a lot of high fat foods.
Sure.
And then calling it keto. And so anyway, I don't know what I was saying.
Do you think keto is a fad or a trend, or is it, like,
I think the fact that my mom has tried keto makes it a fad. But I think high fat is a critical dietary lifestyle.
Sure.
That it should be more of a trend.
Yeah, it's going to be an underlying trend.
Yeah.
That might have to go through some names, some fads.
Some dorky keto names.
Right, and that happened with paleo too. It's like,
totally,
Atkins and,
well, people go too heavy where it's just like, I'm eating meat and nothing else.
Yeah.
And, like, you need
vegetables. And you're like, why do you not feel good? That's so weird.
What is your philosophy like? And before I go to, like, what your philosophy on food is today and how do you guys eat, like, any other, like, interesting trends or products out there? Or on flip side, anything you're like, eh, God, are you done yet?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, what
you
was want, yours?
Were you going to do bad or good?
Okay, I was going to do both.
Okay, let's start with good.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I love grain-free foods. And so I love Siete out of Austin.
Our friends from Austin.
Yeah, we have so many friends. The Garza family.
They need to make thicker chips.
Like restaurant thick chips.
I go so heavy on the guac.
Yeah.
I'm a little too aggressive, maybe.
Have you tried their new cashew queso?
Yeah, we had it at Revitalized.
Oh, duh, of course.
Yeah, it launched there. That's the first time I saw it. Yeah. They're super legit. Picnic, which is another company.
Yeah.
God, I just love them. They're doing ready to drink butter coffees.
They're awesome.
Those are my two crush brands that are evolving. And then there's one that's so small called Mammoth Creameries, and they're basically doing keto ice cream again. Maybe it's not called keto ice cream a year from now, but the guy who invented it, he actually works at Epic, and he's a type 1 diabetic, And so it's an ice cream that his wife developed for him where it doesn't affect his insulin. So he can eat buckets of this stuff. And it's so delicious. And it's so creamy. And it's like traditional.
I think it's going to be huge.
Yeah, so what are the ones you wish they would go away?
There is this fucking honey company, like quote unquote honey. And I think it's called like Bee Free Honey or something like that. And it's a bee free honey.
Which is fucking
crazy.
How
do you do that?
First of
all, you mix like sugar and apple juice together.
Yeah, it's just like high fructose corn syrup.
But it pisses me off so bad that they are saying like, let's basically remove bees from our ecosystem. Bees are responsible for so much of our food production system in general.
There's a great line. You mentioned bees and sugar. Dr. David Perlmutter, who's been on this podcast and he was at Revitalize in 2016, had this great quote. It doesn't matter if your bees are meditating in an ashram, it's still sugar.
Yeah. Fair.
Yes.
Okay, so you also so you guys are parents, mm-hmm. and you're entrepreneurs. So like, what does that look like now? Like, how do you find balance? Is balance even a thing? Like Colleen and I will talk, we use the phrase, we've talked about it here a lot, is like, we just fail at balance. We call it work-life integration. Like we kind of failed at that. Like what's your take?
Man, I feel like we made a really, I don't think we would have brought Scout into this world if we had sold the business to General Mills, because when every single day and the future of our employees and our own livelihoods could go away at a moment's time, that was way too much stress to carry. And we were,
so even that growth, it was that, in that hyper growth, it was that stressful.
It was really
because we had so much hyper growth that we all recognized how much potential our brand had, and it was like, okay, so now we're clear category leaders. Like we're inventing, we're pioneering a new space. More pressure is on us now, sure. to get it right. I feel like right now I'm so glad we have Scout, but it wouldn't have happened if we were still an independent business. It would have just been too much stress and too cruel to bring a baby into the world.
I don't think I would have even been able to get pregnant.
Yeah.
Like my body was just too stressed.
Getting chased by a lion constantly, yeah. Fight or flight or something like that. But no, now, I mean, we built out a really awesome team. We have, I don't know how many employees, probably like 50 employees now. And we've built some really good leaders. And so we're removed a lot from the day-to-day. We're still there as the spirit animal, the brand, and guiding the mission and the impact and love being present. But we get to spend a lot of time with Scout right now, mm-hmm. which is awesome.
But I mean, like, yeah, same thing. Like, there's no such thing as work-life balance. And I think that we are all lucky in the sense that, like, we love what we do.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't necessarily feel like I need to cut my day at 5 and leave work. You know, like, there's no leaving work because it's always on my mind. We're always creating. We're always, like, evolving and thinking of new things, right? And we're always working on new things. So, like, that idea of balance just kind of doesn't exist in our life.
Yeah, and you can't turn off wellness. Like, I always joke to Colleen, I'm like, I can be married to a quote-unquote civilian who wasn't into this stuff. It's like, this is life. Like, it's,
yeah.
Wellness is life. Like, I think that's one of the reasons there are so many couples in this space or entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
You can't separate. Like, you can't just, like, be so passionate about this, and it's your life. Wellness is life. It's how you eat. It's how you move and breathe and so forth. And then your partner's, like, not into it. Yeah, it's like, how does that, maybe it works, but for me, I'm like, I can't do that.
Right. I know.
Yeah, and consumers, they can recognize the difference too. Like when there's an authentic story, passionate entrepreneurs and founders driving something that's special and close to their hearts, consumers recognize that all day long. That can't be fabricated. So if you're going to do it, yeah, like you said, you got to commit. That has to be your life. And your waking moments have to be focused on that, as well as other things you love, like fitness and family. But you can't turn it off.
So what do you guys do when you're like stressed? Do you have like a go-to?
Trail running for me, for sure.
Yeah.
Running.
Road running or trail running? Or track running?
Trail running.
Or treadmill running?
Treadmill. trail running.
So, running in place.
And so getting back to food, like how would you describe your food philosophy? Like how do you guys eat now?
Oh man, it's always kind of evolving, especially, I mean, I guess Taylor can describe how we eat right now. It's not necessarily how I want to eat. which is interesting because I think how I want to eat doesn't exist quite yet.
Well, let's hear both.
Okay.
Yeah, we eat a pretty meat-heavy diet. That's kind of the... Whenever I start cooking every night, it's like, hey, what's going to be the animal protein that we eat tonight? And then Katie's usually like, hey, will you please make a salad tonight? And half the time I'll make a salad. And then the other half of the time, maybe we'll just eat like some sauerkraut or some other fermented vegetables or sweet potatoes or something like that.
Cauliflower rice. We eat a lot of cauliflower rice.
Yeah, lots of cauliflower rice.
Scout eats a lot of avocados, like a lot of avocados.
So does Ellie.
Yeah.
Kids, they're easy awesome. To eat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can just squish them in your mouth.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
And then, yeah, perfect world, how would you eat?
So, okay, so I've been just, like, kind of struggling with my produce selections recently. Because, you know, organic on a large scale is as destructive as conventional in a sense. You know, like, they're actually having to till more than conventional farmers do.
It's more destructive on the land, not necessarily the
body.
Body, right?
Right. And so, yeah, so it's this constant battle. I'm like, okay, do I want to buy conventional, which might be better for the land? Maybe. Or do I want to buy organic, which is better for my body, but maybe worse for the land? Because they're constantly tilling, because they can't spray the weeds and such. And so in an ideal world, we would start seeing organic on a large scale that incorporated regenerative practices like no-till and cover crops and intercropping. Because at this point, it's just monoculture fields. It's basically conventional farming. It's industrialized organic, right? So in an ideal world, I'd like us to get to the point where we can have better produce options.
You going to start growing them on your ranch?
We do have a garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So talk about your ranch. Like, your ranch is pretty, you talked about a little bit the size, but like, it's some folks here at My Money Green have been over there, and you're also, they came back making everyone jealous, bragging about the home cooked meal you cook for them.
Aww.
But like, give people an idea of like how you guys, like what I love about you, you walk the talk. Paint a picture of the ranch and like what's going on there.
Yeah.
Funny enough, so we intentionally bought the shittiest piece of property we could find, which is so funny. It had been on the market for over 2 years. It was desertified. There wasn't a green growing plant on the whole piece of property. And everyone else that saw that was like, I am definitely not moving my family here, growing food here. This soil is incapable of life. I'm out. And we saw it as an opportunity, like a baseline, starting at 0%. And we wanted to challenge that land, use animals as our inputs to make it better.
Truly starting at 0%. I mean, the organic matter in our soil is 0.5%, and it should be around the 8% range.
Yeah, wow. So it's crazy. So our first species we put on the land was honeybees, and we have an apiary with about 60,000 honeybees right now. We have the largest herd of bison in Central Texas, so we have 73 animals. We have a couple hundred chickens, turkeys, ducks, some pigs soon, but it's multi-species, so all the animals work together symbiotically. They all selectively eat different types of grasses or forbs on the pasture, and their presence, whether it's a chicken scratching to help break up compacted soil, or maybe a turkey going over there and moving some bison poop to spread out the fertilizer and get any parasites out of it. I mean, everything is coming back together, and some of the magical things that we've seen out there is just, we have some creeks on the property that, like when we bought it, they were empty for large parts of the year. But as our soil has become covered, we're more effective at holding and absorbing rainfall, which goes into the aquifer. And these springs are more vibrant, cleaner, and more full year round than we could have ever imagined. And our area has actually become a wildlife sanctuary. I think we have like 400 deer that call our place home.
Wow.
So it's amazing in its own sense. We have a couple thousand birds that live. These are wild birds that live with our bison herd. So every time we move our bison, I mean, it's almost like these birds can create a shadow, like a solar eclipse or something, as they go over the sky. It's that thick. And that's been really cool to see that happen.
And it's like an hour outside of Austin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So Austin, one of my favorite cities. Where do you guys eat? What are your favorite places to eat?
My most favorite place recently is this place. I always say it wrong. Is it Leroux?
Leroux.
Leroux.
How do you spell it?
L-O-R-O.
Okay.
Leroux.
Yeah.
It's Tyson Cole, mm-hmm. who's did like Uchi. It's like a really famous sushi place in Austin. And then Franklin's Barbecue. Oh, yeah. It's like a fusion between those two guys. They're like super mastermind chefs. And it's quick and delicious and unique creative flavors. It's just so good.
That's a good one.
Do you guys get to bypass the line at Franklin's?
We just don't I don't stand in line for food.
That's like a tourist thing.
So did you ever go? How do you get the food there? If you stand, what's the secret? I know.
You go to Leroux, which doesn't have a line.
Yeah, there's lots of good barbecue in Austin.
What else is on your list?
Whenever we have early morning workouts, which, you know, it's so hot in the summer, so we have to wake up before the sun comes out and get our exercise on, and then we finish these epic workouts starving, and we love to go to the picnic storefront or the brick and mortar.
The brick and mortar.
Where they have like a full menu.
Yeah.
And it's all like paleo, really artisan crafted. They cook in avocado oil instead of any kind of conventional low quality oils.
They have the best Brussels sprouts.
So Brussels sprouts at picnic.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna have to try that.
With bacon in them.
Yeah, there's pork belly in it. It's incredible.
So what are your other good, I'm always curious about like if you know, everyone thinks barbecue Austin and they immediately think Franklin's. Where do you go if you don't go to Franklin's?
Ooh. We have recently found at a farmer's market.
Oh yeah.
It's like Texas Farmers Market. They have a couple tours in Austin throughout the week, but there's a vendor called Mum's Food.
M-U-M or M-O-M?
M-U-M.
Okay.
And it is unfreaking real.
The brisket is incredible. Scout, it like melts in your mouth, and so Scout can just like put it in his face.
Yeah. And it's grass-fed Wagyu from West Texas. It's really high quality. Good. And the guy who's, you know, it's like when Franklin started, it's where that guy is right now in his growth. That's trajectory, awesome. But he's amazing.
So I always close with the last two questions. So what keeps you up at night and what has you excited every morning?
I would say what keeps me up at night are just like these catastrophic natural disasters that are only exacerbated by like our infrastructure system, you know, and our agricultural system. But what gets me excited in the morning is knowing that there's a solution to that, and that there is hope, and that with good people and good intentions and a lot of drive, that we can make a big impact.
I guess I would say I lose sleep. I have nightmares about laboratory created meat. That's weird, 'cause we believe that animals are a critical component of the ecosystem, and their impact on the land, when managed appropriately, is very beneficial. And so for us to try to get rid of that animal impact that's necessary for healthy, thriving ecosystems, it's very disturbing.
And then replace it with more monoculture crops, destructive monoculture, you know.
Sure.
Which, just to elaborate, the monoculture sprayed crops are the raw materials that are put into the laboratory-grown meats. And then what gets me excited every morning is I just think that the organization, the Savory Institute, is just changing the world. They're true leaders, educating, working with ranchers. They're still producer-first oriented, where they're actually going out on landscapes internationally and teaching people how to manage regeneratively. And they just recently developed a program that's scientifically robust and has empirical data outcome based that shows regeneration over time. So they're walking the walk, the real deal. And I think if more people can get on board with them or similar efforts, we have a really big shot at changing a lot of the critical issues of our civilization.
So last question, if you guys could go back in time and give yourself advice when you were first starting out as entrepreneurs, what advice would that be?
I don't know. They're
staring at each other like, who's going to take this one?
I'm probably, this is a terrible answer, but I wouldn't change anything about our path. And so if I would have taken advice, we wouldn't have hit like all the different journey points that we did. And so, but advice that I give other people is to not take money from shitty people.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Just like only take money from people that you would have dinner with or hang out with or whatever?
Oh, I got a good one, actually.
Okay, go.
And this is one, too, that we give people advice. And we even think about with Scout and our kid. But it's like my advice to myself. I mean, Katie and I had, we were in school for so long. Mm-hmm. And we're like undergraduate, graduate, doctorate. I mean, it was insane. And so I would just challenge myself and say, to be really successful in life and to be really happy, it's more important for you to go experience the world and find the things that you're passionate about versus being in school for 8+ years.
Sitting no in sense. A classroom, right.
Yeah, you need to interact with the world to really find out what makes you, what resonates with you and what your purpose is.
So how do you, okay, really last question. You mentioned success. Like how do you define success? It's a term that a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah, I'd say success starts with more for us, it's personal. And so what success looks like for me is that I get to be with my family and I get to eat the food that I want to eat. And I get to surround myself with really inspirational people that give me a lot of energy and that make me look forward to being on this planet and trying to live out the rest of my time here making this place better.
I love that. Yeah. Katie and Taylor, husband and wife duo behind one of our favorite brands, Epic. Thanks so much for being here.
No, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.